Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Greetings, podcastlings. Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 84. All right, couple of quick announcements. Minneapolis, May 6th, the Varsity Theater. Also, May 12th, we're doing a special Nerdist Podcast live at Meltdown at our space with Rove McManus. It's going to be Aussie night. And then Axis of Awesome is going to drop by, do a couple songs in preparation for their big, huge show at Largo in L.A. on May 19th. Also, May 20th, I'll be at Littlefield in Brooklyn. So information on all those tickets are at Nerdist.com. Say, do you need new earbuds? Get $10 off earbuds from our partners at tweakedaudio.com/nerdist. tweakedaudio.com/nerdist. Earbuds are usually $29.95. You will get them for $19.95 if you use that link. So check it out. You'll be supporting the podcast and you'll get some sweet-ass new earbuds. And now for this episode, a bonus episode with Adam Carolla. Basically, Adam just called me up and said, hey, can I come on your podcast? And I said, sure. And it was so much fun, I decided to put it up this week, just because. It's a bonus episode. Three episodes this week. What am I trying to do, kill myself here? Three episodes a week? Well, like, this is really hard work. Now I'm just talking to myself. Yeah, so why don't you just shut up and start the podcast? Why don't you shut up and start the podcast? I'm so sick of me telling me what to do.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Plenty of disk space. We could record for 94 more hours if we felt like it. So,
do it.
Strap it in. Welcome, Adam Carolla.
Great to be here, Chris Hardwick.
You are actually the only person who has repeated on the show. I thought this would happen so long ago that I would have to start repeating guests. I'm like, I'm going to run out of people I know. There's no way I can maintain this for any length of time. And so far, you are the first person that I've had back regularly. But I like having you as a recurring guest on the show.
Well, my hymen has regrown itself like a lizard's tail, so you may bust my cherry one more time.
You got one of them lizard tail hymens? They grow back like
sure, like they have in the Middle East.
Like the Jessica the Vampire on True Blood. She became a vampire when she was a virgin, so when she had sex, her body healed, and she became a virgin again. Very dramatic story that they only addressed in one episode and never picked up again.
Nerding!
Actually, I don't know if True Blood is nerding. It's more, True Blood is more, I think True Blood is more Sex and the City for vampires.
I have this thing, and maybe it's just me, but I'm super sensitive to people sort of taking other people's ideas and or art and sort of running with it. Like when I hear P. Diddy come up with a song and people like the song and I'm explaining to them the reason they like that song is because that song's called Kashmir and it was done in 1973 and they're like, yeah, but this is different. But it's like, no, it's not. That's a riff. It's a song. It already existed. And when I hear about somebody explaining this is a vampire movie, but the twist is, hold on, are you sitting down? Everyone's fat and old? No. They're young and hot and sexually charged. Like, I just feel like when someone says, this is a vampire movie, I go, that's an idea that's 200 years old that you're ripping off. Like, you're stealing someone else. And even if they go, this is a twist on their traditional whatever, which has been done 2,000 times.
Sure.
I still feel like, okay, Lost Boys did it in, 1986. And ever since then, people have been doing a sort of a ripoff on it. Entertainment's entertainment. But to me, art, like... If you're P. Diddy and you would like to come up with a tribute to Biggie Smalls or whoever, come up with your own fucking song. Don't take Sting's shitty song and then repeat it and make a few words to it. And that is the part of the song that you like. And you are ripping off someone else's shit. And it's the antithesis of ripping off something. Hey, I got this thing that already exists, but I'm just going to lay a little of my own shit over the top of it.
Right.
And sell millions of it, and people will fucking defend it. It's
I'm gonna take Carlin's seven dirty word bits and add two words.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take his existing bit, but I'm gonna tag it a couple more times.
Actually, I'm gonna deduct two words to make it easier. Yeah, I'm gonna add cunt liquor and douchebaggery.
Yep.
And I'll make it nine dirty words.
Shit, piss, fuck, cock, cock, motherfucker, and tits, douchebaggery, and cunt liquor.
Oh, wait a minute. I got this great idea for a bit. You and I could do this one together. It's called Who's on Second?
Right, because they didn't cover... They covered first base. They covered first.
That guy legged out a single. But if we did Who's on Second...
Wait, who's in the outfield? I mean, besides the Angels.
Yeah.
Who's in the outfield?
That's my point. It's somebody else already came up with the idea. As far as art goes,
yeah,
it's one thing if you manufacture washing machines and you go, well, somebody invented a washing machine and now I'm going to invent one that's better. Like, okay, fine. Like, you're that British vacuum guy who I'm sure speaks with a fake accent. I'm sure that guy's from New Jersey. And I'm sure he screams at his wife every night, "Yous get the fuck out of here, you bitch, before I show you the back of my..."
Wait, I got to answer the phone. It's my agent. Hello?
Hello? Oh, hard at work at the lab right now,
he's
don't you know?
Choking his wife with the vacuum cleaner extension cord.
Working on my next innovation.
Suck it, suck it. I'm talking to the vacuum cleaner, of course.
Right. I'm just saying whether it's... I have another idea for a vampire TV show, or I'm P. Diddy, and I have another idea for a song, if it already exists...
There's no question that sampling and mashups are for people who don't have... Who have sort of allowed people to be like, hey, I don't have to come up with a whole new thing. I'll just take these existing things and reassemble their parts.
Yeah, and how the fuck can you go wrong with Cashmere? I mean, how can you go wrong with that lick?
It worked pretty well the first time. Worked pretty well. But that's all. That's where all media is right now, is just rehashing and retooling and rebranding and remixing. Because, I mean, like, I feel like it's funny that we are so dependent on oil as a culture, because now our culture has also become a weird, limited resource. Because you can only just reference stuff for so long before you're like, well, I think we just remade everything. I think we have to start over.
Yeah, it's weird that I haven't heard a song that didn't sound like another song in like the last 5 years. It's sort of like Mexican food. There's so many things you can do with cheese, beans, rice, and tortillas where eventually you're going to start overlapping.
Well,
you're start coming up with the same thing. Yeah, but this is an enchilada. I know, wildly different than a burrito. Let me guess. Tortillas, right. Cheese, right. Beans,
okay, but in
right.
the quesadilla...
Wrapped up into a tube-shaped, right. Really, you need enchilada and a burrito. No, this one, the cheese is on the outside.
It's an enchirito.
Yeah.
It's an enchirito. And you know what's funny is that Mike Furman was telling me about the new Lady Gaga, or I don't know if it's new. I don't know what the timeline of Lady Gaga songs are, but maybe it's Born This Way. He's like, whatever one of her new songs, he's like, it's just Express Yourself. It's Madonna's
right.
Express Yourself. Like, literally, it's just that song with different lyrics. Well, of course, it's going to be a huge hit.
And maybe the joke's on us, and maybe the Staple Singers' Express Yourself was the Madonna's Express Yourself before Madonna's Express Yourself was. Express yourself.
You've got to make it. Hey, by the way, since we're expressing ourselves, I do think that it is important to note going back to your Lost Boys comment, Rob Lowe looks just as good today as he did on Corey Haim's wall in the movie Lost Boys.
He was on the wall in the poster form?
Yeah, you don't remember then?
You see, I only watch these movies. I don't actually masturbate to them, so I'm not in as deep as
then
you are.
You're missing half the movie, then, if you're not masturbating to
it. What poster was it for? Hotel New Hampshire?
No, it was just a poster of Rob Lowe, like, with, like, you know, like a poster a lady would have on her wall, or a young gay gentleman, which is totally fine, because that movie was directed by Joel Schumacher, so I assume that was probably, of course, like, he literally just didn't, I don't think he was trying to be clever or funny, I think he just didn't comprehend what straight young dudes would have in their room.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And maybe Corey Haim's character was not straight, I don't know, I didn't see the follow-up to, they did a third Lost Boys movie that Corey Feldman was in, so I don't know if they ever resolved that storyline or not. Maybe that's what True Blood's about.
Rob Lowe is beautiful, and there's just no two goddamn ways about it. And you wonder, like, is he a good actor, or is it just because he's good looking? Like, is he just a piece of meat? Like, Kim Basinger is really beautiful, but also turns out she's a great actress as well.
Right.
But her looks got her in the door, and then she became a great actress, or was she always a great actress? And is Rob Lowe a good actor? I don't think he is, but what if he looked like pig vomit from the Howard Stern movie? What's his name?
Paul Giamatti.
Would it work?
I don't know, because Giamatti popped pretty well. Giamatti popped pretty well.
But I mean, he's a good actor.
I don't think Rob Lowe would successfully play John Adams.
Uh-huh.
But I think Rob Lowe is good at sort of playing that shifty, handsome guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he's not gonna be Jake LaMotta. You know,
right.
Like, he's not gonna, you know, unless he decides later in life, you know, in his 50s or 60s, to do an old switcheroo and somehow start doing insane character work and surprise everyone.
I wish he'd put on some weight or lose some hair. Or maybe just have an industrial accident, like acid dumped on him by an irate girlfriend or something.
Some sort of weird Mickey Rourke motorcycle mishap.
Something, yeah, like maybe, you know, a Jan Michael Vincent-esque, you know, sort of hooked on prescription drugs, meltdown with some bloating and head trauma. Yeah, something that just knocked him off his game. Because especially, does he look, you know, as delectable as he did in St. Elmo's Fire?
Yeah.
But for the for males, they just get more distinguished anyway.
Right.
So basically, what I'm saying is not only does he look the same,
yeah,
but even if he didn't look the same, it would still be fine because he's a dude. It's like George Clooney doesn't look the same as when he teamed up with Mrs. Garrett at the candy store,
right,
way back in the day. He's got gray in his hair and he's got some crow's feet.
He's distinguished.
He's just as fuckable as he ever was.
Absolutely. But
I'm saying that Rob Lowe is still the same guy.
Dudes have
and
that.
He's a dude.
Dude but has he that ability.
But he doesn't even have to rely on the dude part of it. Like,
right.
Again, that part where, you know, Jack Nicholson, sorry. Jack Nicholson.
No, Jack Nicholas doesn't look too hot.
Jack, he's fat and he's going bald and he's whatever, but he's still getting laid. Like,
yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
Right.
I think the female equivalent to Rob Lowe is, and there's only one.
Okay.
Really. It's really only one.
Okay. Who is it?
It's Christy Brinkley. That's the only one.
Yeah, but she never really acted in stuff except for the Uptown Girl
video.
But
physically, well, let's not forget summer, whatever, National Lampoon's, you know, Grand Canyon Vacation or whatever.
The original Vacation.
Right, but I'm saying in the looks department is literally just flatlined, which is what you want to do if you're her.
Right.
I mean, she's 57 years of age, does not look any different than she did when she was pulling up next to the Griswold family in the Ferrari 308.
Yeah, she looks pretty good. It's probably that ab roller that she uses.
Yeah.
Is that the ab roller? I don't know if that's the ab roller.
And does she ever get together with, like, Kathleen Turner? You know what I mean? And, like, Kathleen Turner must see her... She must see, like Christie's calling on the caller ID.
I'm
and
sure
be
they
like,
all talk,
fuck
yeah.
this.
I'm sure
no
talk.
Way, I'm not going out to lunch with this. There's no one is snapping a picture of the two of us leaving Spago's together or the Ivy together.
Yeah, I mean...
Because those were two that were almost a tie in, like, 1987.
They were, but Christie Brinkley was a very specific kind of model, had a specific model look, and Kathleen Turner just had that body heat Jessica Rabbit, like...
Yeah.
You like, I never looked at Christie Brinkley and thought, boy, it sure would be a whirlwind to get tossed around in the sack with her. And Kathleen Turner just exuded that from every pore of her body.
Right.
You just...
Now it's marinara sauce. Every pore.
She's literally basting in her own juices.
Yes.
Which would make her delicious as a meal, as a snack, for a picnic.
I will oftentimes take a nice piece of Italian bread and just wipe it across her cheek and walk away. Nothing better. Just like when Mama's making it and you dip it into the pot.
It's like a Kathleen Turner tapenade.
Mm.
Yeah, like a nice Kathleen Turner tapenade.
Mm.
Slightly chunky, a little bit of olive oil.
I'm just saying... I think that in the looks department, forget about the acting, but Rob Lowe and Christie Brinkley, I think they're the two parallels for in the last 20 years.
I would tend to agree with that. I mean, Rob Lowe is on the cover of Vanity Fair. The guy does not, I think the joke that him being in the Lost Boys set design is that he is actually a vampire and cannot age or die. I feel like that must be part of it.
And does he sleep in one of those hyperbaric chambers, or is he into, you know, tantric yoga, or...
He might be a mutant.
It's just great genes, right?
Mm-hmm. It's great genes, and he clearly takes care of himself. Because, you know, what I realized what happened was, I mean, I was a super skinny guy my whole life up until about 26, 27, and then all of a sudden the switch flipped,
mm-hmm.
and then I realized, oh, yeah... This is when dudes start going downhill, so that, you know, most guys, by the time they hit 35, just don't, they look 10 years older, 20 years older, because you forget, like, oh, no, actually, it takes a lot of work to eat well and to exercise and to stay healthy, and it's, you know, most of the time you get caught up and it's much easier not to. So Rob Lowe... Definitely, it's genes and whatever effort he's putting out there, and whatever baby seal shavings he's consuming.
And I just want to say this to anyone's listening right now: we're really, and I'm looking at Chris's steno pad here. We got about 15 to 20 more minutes of Rob Lowe, and then I promise you, we will move on to Chad Lowe. Okay, and then pretty much just wrap it up. But
yeah, the Nerdist is changing. I'm going to call it the Sweet and Low Cast.
Yeah.
So it's just going to be all about what Rob Lowe's up to.
Yeah. How tough does it? It's got to suck to be Chad Lowe, because there's got to be a lot of like Rob Lowe. Whoa, would I like to meet your brother? Like in high school and in college. Like, hell yeah! And then a lot of cute, I guess. That's your brother? Yeah. Same mom and dad? Yeah, yeah. Oh. He's okay. Like, well, Chad had to be... There's just a look of disappointment on every chick's face when they were set up. Like Rob had to say to some people, like, in high school, like, listen, I have 9 girlfriends. I cannot add a 10th. My brother's... couple years younger,
if
Chad.
If you fuck my brother, I'll let you see my cock.
Yeah, he's single. How about I set you up with him? And they're like, okay. And then there had to be that palpable,
Well, listen, it's hard enough to have a sibling who is like the all-star. But then imagine when that all-star goes from, hey, it's not just that he's a star quarterback, he's super famous, he's a super sex symbol, and will continue to be so for now, literally 25 years.
Right. And then Chadlow married Hillary Swank,
yeah,
who's actually a better looking dude than Chadlow. Like, Hillary's a hot dude. She's a good looking woman too.
Yeah, she definitely has that jaw structure that's like, oh, either way, you're very, very attractive.
I could really experience the whole bi lifestyle just by dating her.
Yeah, that's right.
Without really fully committing.
I'm going to go around back to the shed and just see what it's like back there.
Right.
Hey, and you're still, you know, cutting hair.
Yeah, I was just watching Amelia Earhart last night on HBO or Showtime or whatever. And I was like, look at her. I was like, that's a good looking chick dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shin is beautiful.
It's got to suck then. Had to suck when Chad would invite Rob over for like Thanksgiving when he was together with Hillary.
Yeah.
And then he's literally sitting in between Rob, who makes a better looking chick and dude than Chad.
Right.
And then Hillary, who makes a better looking chick and dude than Chad as well.
Yeah. So there is a sliding low scale, basically, mm-hmm. is what you're saying, that where we can rate.
I like to figure out how much younger Chad is than Rob.
He
can't be more than 5 years, right?
Maybe 5 or 8 years, I think. Maybe, mm-hmm. possibly. Yeah. And that Hillary Swank is, she totally could totally fuck with your mind, because you could see sort of the short hair and it's like the boys don't cry thing, and then like,
right.
And she has a perfect woman's body.
Yeah, I know. Like when you go to Central America and you get drunk and hooked up with one of those smoking hot trannies,
but what you don't want though is you know, like when she was filming Boys Don't Cry, if she was with Chad and they, you know, like if he was on top of her in the act of lovemaking, and then you just kind of look down, what you don't want is, hey, what's up, dude? Like, right. Oh my god, no, wait, you're a lady.
Yeah.
I'm inside a lady.
Yeah, I know, and I pray those two find love again. But I wonder sometimes.
Big Hillary. I'm a big Swank fan. Big Swank fan. I mean, of the magazine and of Hillary Swank.
Yeah.
Do they still make Swank magazine?
I don't know, but I hope. But I was also watching it in Glorious Bastards last night, too, after I was done with Amelia, because, you know, I got range.
Yep.
And they were talking in French, and they were like, oui, okay. And then I saw oui, and then I saw OUI, and then I was like,
the magazine,
oui. And then for the first time ever, it was one of these things where I was like, oh, it's called yes.
Yeah.
I know it's oui. I don't know why I didn't do, you ever do that thing where you show up so late to the game where like you're sitting around and you go, hey, I never thought about this, but, Sundance Film Festival, you know, that was Robert Redford's name in Butch Cassidy, and he probably named, and everyone's looking at you like, yeah, I know, retard, we came up with that in 81. Like, and you're like, I just came up with that yesterday. Like,
yeah.
It had been floating around.
Same thing happened to me when I realized that Torchwood, the spinoff series to Doctor Who, is an anagram for Doctor Who. I mean, I get it.
Nerding!
Those magazines, it was funny that there was that time in the 70s and 80s when all of those Flint publications came, and there was just like an explosion in the porn mag industry after mm-hmm. Penthouse mm-hmm. decided to go way dirtier than Playboy. And
right.
then those magazines, I remember just seeing them as a kid, and it just like, you saw so much of the inside of a woman that it was like looking at a taffy pull.
Right.
Like all those magazines. And then, you know, usurped by the internet. Usurped by the internet a million times over. Completely ruined Wee and Swank.
I'm one of the few people who likes freshwater taffy. I'm one of the guys out there. You hear a lot of folks yapping about the saltwater taffy. I'm all about the freshwater taffy, and there's a lot of haters out there.
Yeah.
And I understand why. Yeah, I know, it was weird. Well, you know, I grew up in North Hollywood, so, you know, the cradle of porn, almost the birthplace of porn, the San Fernando Valley. And, you know, so the girls I went to high school with and stuff got into it. And so, of course, that was...
Wow, you almost could have been a facial in
that
a scene.
That was huge. Yeah, I mean, the day we found out Christy Canyon was doing porn, you know, I went to the Sadie Hawkins dance with her sister, like, in the 9th grade. And
really?
Oh, yeah.
Elizabeth Canyon?
No.
Oh, you said she changed her name?
They have a, yeah. Sometimes in porn, they'll use a different name.
I don't understand.
Always just a first name, last name. No, she has a crazy Armenian last name.
Oh, okay.
I mean, like that makes Duke Majin sound like, you know, Smith. Like, okay. A crazy last name. It would never work. But, her sister, Carla, actually, it's funny that it is Christy and Carla now, but I knew them, and then there's like other girls I went to high school with, and you know, and all that kind of stuff. But it was funny. I was interviewing Christy on my podcast, and I said, you know, what was the first scene you did? Like the first, I'm always kind of curious, like how, you know, the first time you mm-hmm. really got to do it in front of. And she was like, well, actually, it was just what they call a reel or a short or whatever. I'll come up with the name of it in a second, but it wasn't a feature length scene. But I thought I was just doing a photo shoot, and it turns out, you know, Ron Jeremy was there and we were doing a movie, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, did you know Ron Jeremy? And she's like, no, I just, you know, I thought we're doing a shoot photo, and turned out, you know, we're going to have sex. And I thought, wow, that's wildly open-minded of you. like you just like, I thought we're doing a photo shoot, but there's the hedgehog with his
stroking his dick.
Just stroking his dick. And yeah. Someone's like, oh no. You gotta take a load in the face. Oh,
some people would consider this rape, but
right.
Well, it's the late 70s, early 80s. I guess it'll be fine.
Yeah, I think they call them loops or something. Anyway, Swedish erotica number.
So like,
something.
Yeah, so like old Warner Brothers cartoons, they would show them before the features.
Yeah,
in the adult theaters.
Yeah. Also, they would
butts up, Doc.
They would do it to figure out. If the chick would do it or like was any good at it or something. I don't feel like I would need to test anyone for that. Like,
right.
Can you hold still while Ron Jeremy fucks you while you're high on coke? Like, I don't need a dry run, pardon the pun. Like, if you're either in or you're out.
I did put that on my special skills part of my resume, but that's just one of those things like, oh, if I ever have to do it, then I'll figure out how to do it.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's like
horseback riding or
you have,
Australian
you have English,
accent.
Equestrian, you yeah. have the Cockney, and yeah. the proper British, and yeah. you have the will hold still while coked up, letting Ron Jeremy fuck me. Yeah, I've seen it. You know what I miss? I miss the composite on the headshot composite.
That's so funny you say that. I was just talking about that with someone the other day. I have these books. Maybe I've talked about this on the podcast before, but do you remember Faces International?
Yes.
So Faces International was this big, well, I guess it turned out to be kind of a scam.
Right.
I mean, it basically preyed on the on desperate young actors, or not even young, just desperate actors. But they would publish a quarterly thick magazine of headshots.
Right.
And so you could buy full pages, quarter pages, and people would do those composite shots where they were like a librarian in one picture and a football player in another picture and a fly
right.
fisherman in another
yeah.
one. And the creepiest, the first of all, the book is just, it's just like, it's just a sadness Bible. Like every
right.
picture, you're just like, oh.
Yeah.
And then
it's even sadder with the kids.
The kids are the worst. I mean, first of all, it's all 80s, so it's pre-irony.
Right.
Pre-irony
right,
in our
right.
culture. So
right.
everyone was just trying as hard as they could for real. And the kids section is so creepy because they're like weird JonBenet sexy-esque
right.
pictures of people that fucking took their kids. Like, it's so gross.
But the thing
you almost can't masturbate to it.
The thing, I know, I was this close to not being off to one of those 80s Facebook or Face International things just this morning. But it's always weird because they doll the chick up, put her in the taffeta, give her
gross.
The JonBenet look.
So
but
gross.
In the next corner, she'd have the tomboy baseball cap on
yes.
askew, even a fake. I've seen one that had the fake black eye drawn in.
Right.
And her like holding the baseball like, hey, Tuffy McTufferson. But
yeah.
meanwhile, that was stepdad that backhanded her in the taffeta. Like,
right.
that's where she got the black eye.
Right.
But they used it. There used to be a comical black eye, too, where it was literally just a half black circle that went
right.
on your eye. But it's like, there she is. She's a tomboy. Here she is. She's gussied up. This is hers, the studious one. Now she's got glasses and her hair's up in a bun.
It's so, like, what's so gross about it is just looking through. And it's sort of like, kind of like what you were just touching upon. Just looking through the picture and seeing, like, this poor girl's home life is atrocious. Like this should have been the biggest red flag for the authorities to step in, for Child Protective Services to step in.
I would love to have a collection of the greatest composite shots. There'd be the guy who is the short order cook.
Yep.
Construction worker.
The meter maid.
Yeah, meter maid. And then at some point, that guy would have to prove that he could doll himself up, too. So it'd be like tuxedo red cummerbund and red, you know, very 80s, you know, looking very dapper. But
putting
a little,
on the Ritz.
But 30 pounds overweight, like yep. that guy. Yeah, and there's nothing better than that fake sort of sterilized, tough New York guy. Like, cuts the sleeves off a denim stonewashed jacket. Hey, bub.
Brick
get
wall,
out.
Motorcycle.
Driving a cab. Yeah. Kind of, hey, driving yeah. a hack here. Yo, yeah.
Like, you know what the odds...
Smoking.
I guess it's supposed to show, hey, I'm versatile.
Right.
But the odds that someone, a casting person, would be like, all day we've been trying to figure out who we could stick in this cab mm-hmm. that might look like they might drive a cab. Right. I mean, you know, that could be anyone. I don't know.
Sure.
Oh, my God, the answer to my prayers. Like, I almost feel like those composite pictures paint the actors into a box. Like, they almost say, like, no, these are the three things I do. These are the four characters I do and nothing more.
Well, ironically, whether it's short order cook or cab driver or construction worker, I'll guarantee that guy's doing one of those things right now.
Yeah.
So at least he's got a good picture
they
of him doing it.
They just had a follow him to his three different jobs.
Right.
I think actually what would be really funny is but of course I'm not going to do this because it would take time, but
sure.
to take really great actors and take screen captures from their movies and create those four panel shots and then like put their name at the bottom in some crappy agency like
right.
the Goldwater Agency or whatever. Like take Paul Giamatti and he's dressed up as John Adams, then he's in Sideways, and then he's in, you know...
I think it'd be fun if they had a sense of humor to get them to pose for bad 80s-esque composite shots. Like, if they had a sense of humor about themselves.
Yeah.
I would like to
That's a Funnier Die video right there.
That.
It's like, take Paul Giamatti out for his new headshot photo.
Right.
And then he's doing a bunch of that horrible shit, and then you see the finished product at the end.
Right.
Now I've just given it away, so.
Plus, it's been like 7 minutes since we've talked about Rob or Chad
Don't
Lowe.
Think that he wasn't swimming around in the back of my mind shirtless at him. I mean, he was back there doing hammer curls.
Yeah,
This whole time. Do you ever do stuff with Acme anymore, or is that no more?
I eat at the restaurant Amalfi next to Acme all the time. And if I drink enough red wine at Amalfi, I will sometimes go through the door that connects the two buildings and tell my wife for the 33rd time, I built those benches. I remember where I was. And she's like, yeah, I know. You told me that. I know. But, you know, those are carriage bolts. And look at them. By the way, sit on it. It's been 16 years. They're still fine.
You don't get that
still
kind of craftsmanship
yeah.
anymore.
I mean, look at them. I remember where I was when I built those benches. Yeah, the benches that I built for the old theater on Lancashire in NoHo got moved to the new theater.
Is that in the new NoHo Arts District? As they've
yeah. Pleasantly- No, it's weird driving through there because I was there in the probably 90, 91 building the first Acme Theater. And I remember when they were sawing holes in the sidewalk to, you know, plant these little saplings because, like, hey, it's the NoHo Arts District and we're going to put trees and we're going to clean this place up. And I was like, back then, I was like, oh, please give me a break. And now I drive down Lancashire and I see these trees. Like these full-blown trees there, and it's like, oh, now it has sort of turned into something. I mean, I'm long gone.
It has, but
turned
it's sort
into,
of like...
No, here's what it was. It was dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
It's gone from dangerous to boring, but it's not turned into an arts district.
Well, no, because that main drag of North Hollywood is now sort of, it's like if you go to someone's house, like it's almost like the Clampets. Like the foyer is gorgeous,
right?
But then if you look at any other part of the house, it's like, yeah, there's fucking possums camping out there, and there's a pile of garbage in the guest room.
Yeah, as soon as you get behind the place and go down the alley, and as soon as you make a right on one of those side streets and get, you know, 10 feet into one of those crazy apartment buildings with, like, the, you know, where they have the first story balconies, have the chicken wire up so no one will jump up and get steal their 10 speed. Like, just fucking horrible.
Do you still, who else was in your Acme, not class, but group? Who else did anyone else come out of there that went on to do anything else?
You know, we had Chad Lowe.
Did his brother Rob show up?
We had Ralph Garman, you know.
Garman,
with,
yeah.
Kevin and Bean out here. And we had Alex Borstein.
From, oh, nice.
You know, Family Guy and many other TV, yeah. things. She was a bitch back then, if anyone wants to know. If money turns you into a bitch. No, turns out she was a bitch long before that. We had her. I had to tell Seth MacFarlane this the other day. She married a dude who used to be in the troupe back in the day called Doug Jackson, except for his name is, now he goes by Jackson Douglas.
and
it's like, whoa, huh? And, you know, the biggest nightmare for a dude who's known as Jackson Douglas now is running into me, who knew him as the pot-smoking, lazy, had a shopping cart in his, and he had literally had a shopping cart in his room on the third floor of his apartment, which was later on condemned after the 94 earthquake. But I know him as Doug Jackson, lovable stoner.
Yeah.
Everyone else knows him as Jackson Douglas, avant-garde, you know,
sure,
artist.
Paying tribute to Andrew Jackson and the orator, Stephen Douglas.
Right. So, he married her, so and there's a handful of other folks that have gone on to what's his name from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, red haired guy. Shit, I can't think of his name. Anyway, you'll hop on that laptop and figure him out. Is he from It's Always Sunny? Well, anyway, there's been a handful of people that have gone on to greatness.
Yeah, the was Jamie Kaler in your group? He was under you.
Yeah, maybe I'm thinking of Jamie Kaler.
No, Kaler's on My Boys.
Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah,
all right,
yeah.
Yeah, Jamie. Red hair?
Yeah, red hair.
Yeah, nice guy.
Really nice guy. Super funny.
Yeah, Jamie.
He used to run this that stand-up room, and before he started working in television, he was a bartender at this place called O'Brien's in Santa Monica. And there used to be a Thursday night show there. And I used to go get drunk and do stand-up every Thursday there in Santa Monica.
How'd it go? Last time we were talking, I was talking to you. You were talking about you had a 1,000-seat theater in Boston.
Yes,
and you're like, I'm hoping I can sell it out, but you didn't know because it was a bigger venue.
It got close. It was about 900.
That's good.
Yeah. So it didn't. It wasn't packed to the gills, but it was pretty fucking full. Like it was. I chalked it in the win category.
Oh yeah. No, I can tell you if you play 1,000-seat theater and you get 850 people in that place,
yeah,
from the stage it looks full.
Yeah,
the promoter will tell you, oh no, there was 150 extra seats, or there was comps, or there was whatever. Right. But when you're standing on stage, that's full enough.
Yeah, no, it was really great. And now, you know, I'm doing that thing where yeah, but that was Boston, so what if people don't come out in these other cities, and it was just a weird fluke? Like, I can't let myself enjoy the fact that it happened. Like, I'm still like, oh, no, so there must have been some weird rift. The city must have tipped up and dumped a bunch of people in by accident. It'll never happen again. Like,
sure.
I'm so reticent to believe, because now I've got one coming up in Minneapolis on May 6th, and I'm super like, oh, I hope people show up.
Where are you playing Minneapolis?
This place called the Varsity Theater.
Oh, I'm playing the Varsity
Theater. You playing the Varsity?
When does this thing air?
I'll put it up pretty quickly because I want this to... Because you're playing the Wiltern soon, right?
Yeah, that's the one we got to get.
When's your Wiltern show?
Varsity, I don't think you're going to have a problem because I'm doing the Varsity on Thursday night and we sold out 2 shows already. So if I can sell out 2 shows on a Thursday night, you can definitely sell out.
You're more popular than I am, though. You have more... You can...
Oh, I've done that math. I'm saying, clearly, look around.
I snorted.
No, I've done that math, Christopher. What I'm saying is if I can sell out and
two.
These shows were sold out 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
If I can sell out two on a Thursday,
yeah.
You can definitely get 300 people. No, you can definitely sell out one on a Friday
or
Saturday.
Do you feel like...
That's a good... Minneapolis, a good comedy town.
Oh, Minneapolis is such a great comedy town. I played Acme when I was there last January, and that is a phenomenal club. I mean, Minneapolis is one of those cities where, you know, if you've never been there, you don't know much about it. You're surprised. Like Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Minneapolis... These are really great cultural hubs. Like, there's a lot of super cool arty people there. There are theater districts. People go out and they watch art.
No, I concur. And yeah, it's funny that I'm going to be there, you know, for 3 days from now.
Yeah.
Doing two shows. And yeah, we didn't put much into it. And it was been sold out for a couple of weeks. And, you know, usually it's that last minute push. Can you get a few hundred people in the door day of kind of thing? These things went clean like a long time ago, so God bless Minneapolis. But yeah, Wiltern, Los Angeles, see, that's my home turf.
It is, but L.A. is such a hard place to move tickets because it's. I feel like, because I've been hesitant to, you know, like I've gotten a couple calls like, oh, do you want to do like the El Rey or the what? And I'm like, you know. I don't think I would... Because I do so many shows in L.A. and there's so much entertainment. I mean, like, there's so much to see in L.A. and people take shit for granted here.
Sure.
That I just feel like I don't think if I tried to do a really big venue in L.A. that it would go all that well.
Well, I'm with you and you know, I'm in that same boat except for I committed to the Wiltern. But the thing it's insane. But the thing is, it's really hard to gauge, like. Seattle, huge. Portland, great. Minneapolis, who the hell knew Minneapolis would be great for me? Houston, not good. Mm-hmm. You know, trying to think of the not good places. I mean, there's been South Beach or whatever, like in Florida, was not. Miami, not great. Did not have a good time over there selling tickets. Wiltern is like 1,600 seats is what they have it. Laid out for.
Yeah.
I'm a little over 800 sold.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But I got a month.
Oh my God, you're going to be fine.
And I don't know about that. I still hate it cuz it's in my own backyard and I've driven past the thing a million times.
But it's not like you sold 100 tickets and you're going to be in the Wiltern. Like it's you will be fine. If you already sold 800, what's the date of the show?
It's May 21st and I actually got Jimmy to come out and we'll do a bit for you guys out there. And you know what I said, and this is what I'd like to say to your audience. I said, and I'm, you know, because we're all trying to wrap our minds around this podcast world and how it works and who you should speak to and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, I did the Tonight Show. I did a bit on the Tonight Show, but it was sort of out on stage with Jay and blah, blah, blah. And then when I was done, I got a plug for being, I was at the Brea Improv or something on like a Wednesday night or Thursday night. I think it was like a Wednesday night or something. And so, you know, so here you're on the Tonight Show. And it was like, I did this bit first. It was like me and then J-Lo came out and did her sit down thing. So I was on prime time, you know, right after the monologue on the Tonight Show. And I said to Mike August, the guy who books my shows, I said, you know, I know we were hurting a little at the Brea Improv, you know, we weren't doing too well. So I said, what are our numbers? What did we get a bump off of the Tonight Show? And he said, let me check. And this is, you know, a day later or whatever it was. And he said, sold 7 tickets. And by the way, if all 7 came from the Tonight Show, it'd still be devastating.
It might be zero.
Probably zero.
Yeah.
But so I started saying to my people, you know, you talk about going on these AM sports shows and plugging your podcast or your live show. You talk about going, you know, people think, oh, go on the Tonight Show and talk about the podcast or go on this late night show or that late night show. But the reality is I don't know. I don't think that moves the dial or the needle.
No,
I, you know what I said to him?
Wrong audience.
I said, I want to go on other people's podcasts.
Yeah.
I'd rather talk to 50,000 super motivated people who go out and support this thing rather than 2 million people that are falling asleep on a sofa in a pile of their own filth, or who are never going to go out and do this. Yeah. I would much rather, I said, you know, get me on Chris Hardwick's podcast because his fans go, A, they listen to podcasts, yeah. So they understand, like, all right, I know what it's like to work a computer and listen to something and to seek out something, but also I will go out and support live shows. Mm-hmm. So we will, and I don't know if you know how big your audience is. Do you know?
Yeah, I have a pretty good idea.
What is it?
I think it's probably about, probably 100 to 150,000 per episode. I mean, like,
well, that's huge.
It depends on the episode. Like, you know, if it's someone like Kevin Smith who brings a large audience, you know,
like a podcast,
it'll hit 100 pretty quickly.
Right.
So
I thought, you know, my whole thing is this group of podcasters ought to get together like you know, the OPEC nations did in fix prices. Like,
wait a minute.
But seriously, you can go on the Tonight Show, but you're not going to see a bump.
No.
You're just not going to sell a ticket. You're not going to see a bump. I mean, it's not going to hurt. It's nice to see on your resume and all that, you know, next to Can Get Fucked by Ron Jeremy Win High on Coke.
On Coke, right.
But in terms of just moving that needle, I think talking to your people, I don't think your people are drastically different than my people.
No. Well, and the other thing is that, you know, you have to look at the kind of, like, people who watch The Tonight Show are older, I think. Probably they watch it very passively.
Sure.
They don't care. It's very disposable, you know.
Right.
But I feel like, you know, what we have with podcasts, it's so wonderful. And what is fun for me is that I feel like we create really cool friendships and relationships with our audience. I know that my audience is comprised almost entirely of people that I would probably want to hang out with, you know?
Right.
And you don't know who's really, the network television is just such a broad spectrum of, you know, it's...
No, I would much rather have a much smaller group of highly motivated people. And by the way, when Chris said, oh, you're at 800 at the Will Turn, you got nothing to worry about, that does not let you people off the hook.
No, Adam's plenty, fine. He doesn't need my money.
I have plenty to worry about. This is, believe me, this will be humiliating for me if you don't buy a ticket to this goddamn show.
I want to know what your numbers are. I want to know how are you guys doing?
We do, well, again, they trickle in. Like, they start off at the first day with, here's how many you have.
Right.
And then the next day, it goes up another 20 grand or something. And then it's like by the end of the week, we usually do a little over 200,000 by a week.
Per episode.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
so
great.
So it'll be like, you can add it up and say you do 1 million a week, even if it's the same 200,000 people just listening over and over again.
Yeah. That's great. And I also, you know, like, The fact that you were able to sort of pull an already dedicated radio audience over is so huge. That what used to be basically a car garage is now a fully functioning fucking streaming video audio podcast studio with people on computers everywhere. There were like 8 or 9 people when I came to do your show a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
working on various things and running around. It was like, it, you know, I think I did your podcast in the first couple weeks, maybe when you went to do it, and it was just like, I think it was just Donnie and maybe that's it, and we sat next to the computer with these lav mics on and just kind of chatted, and you know, it's really grown.
Simpler times. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the whole plan is, at least for me, is to, you know, do things on our own terms, but actually do something. I mean, like, there's that thing where, I mean, there's two parts of the pirate ship, you know, like, hey, man, we're building a pirate ship, and F the program directors, and F the GMs, and F the man, and F Clear Channel, and all the rest of the guys, and Westwood One, and I don't have to listen to anyone. But it's sort of like being a third-party candidate, which is to say, it's cool that you're doing your own thing and you're running on the green ticket and you're into biofuels and stuff like that. But if you don't get one vote,
Yeah, it means
it doesn't really mean.
Yeah, I mean, like, it is. It's interesting to have that direct relation. You know, you cut out the middleman, you cut out the studio, you cut out the major corporation. You have a direct relationship with your advertisers. It's a very simple formula. You say, listen, I get this many people. You give me this much based on that, and then we're all good. But then you also know that that makes it a less. It makes it just makes it a softer hold on what you're doing, because if some of your listeners drop off, that guy goes away. I mean, you know, there is some protection and security in having a larger company say, you know, we're going to worry about that stuff. We'll just give you this money no matter what. You just come in and you just come in and be you, and then we'll take care of all that other shit. I'm totally finding that now.
Being your own boss is one of the most overrated things ever. I mean, you'd be much better off just getting like a corporate credit card, a company car, you know, 4 or 5 weeks vacation time, you know, get paid vacation, you know, use of the corporate jet. Like, it'd be much better just to have a cushy, you know, bonuses and high paying salary and stuff. That is so much better than being the guy who's completely in charge of everything all the time. It's like highly, highly overrated. But what, you know, what I'm getting back to is, you know, building the pirate ship is cool, but if you just sort of become Ralph Nader and you kind of become a joke and nobody votes for you, then it's maybe a symbolic victory, but it's not a real victory.
Right.
The real victory is actually becoming a player, like actually getting an audience that numbers into the hundreds of thousands, mm-hmm. getting sponsors more than the Fleshlight. You know, not that that's not a fine. I'm wearing one now, but
that would explain the humming.
But the point is, you know, like becoming viable,
right?
Essentially, and not becoming the man, but again, at least saying, you know, anyone can start their own podcast. Anyone can do stand up. Anyone can start their own network, but if you have no eyeballs, no ears, no audience, and no sponsors, then what's the difference between talking to a tin can or a piece of yarn on it?
You know, what gets hard specifically for podcasts is that, you know, because I always think, well, sooner or later, these larger media companies are going to catch on that this is where they should be putting their advertising dollars. Because it's definitely cheaper than buying network time, and I think people tune out, you know.
Sure.
When they're watching television a bit. But the problem is, you know, while 100,000, 120, or 200,000 people is a lot for us if we're a mom and pop store, it's not a lot when you're talking about, you know, like a giant, like, you know, Sony Pictures Entertainment. You know, they'll look at that and they'll be like, oh, yeah, no, we want to sink millions of dollars into a campaign, not, you know, not 10 grand.
Right.
Like, they just don't. I think they just don't think it's almost it's larger than you know, like just a guy, like just a guy's friends listening, but it's not quite large enough to attract the super big fish,
right,
who want to blow millions of dollars in traditional media outlets.
Well, you know, we have Go to My PC and Pro Flowers and, you know, places, you know, companies like that that, you know, people have heard of.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they'll do revenue shares with you, and, you know, you sell one Pro Flower and they'll give you $5 for every $19.99 or whatever. I mean, there's ways to do it, and we're doing it. And, you know, as far as the audience goes, you know, I know there's this thing where there's this thought of sort of purity. It's like a band. It's like, well, when Green Day left that little club in Oakland, they sold out, you know?
Right.
And my feeling is, no, they can still be a good band and sell tickets and merchandise and live in a big house. I'm fine with that. I was fine with Led Zeppelin selling a lot of records,
right,
the aforementioned Led Zeppelin. I mean, it doesn't make you into a bad band,
right,
because all of a sudden you're playing a stadium versus an underground punk club in Oakland. You know, I've found that you can be straight as long as the audience doesn't think you're bullshitting them.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I was cruising iTunes the other day and I had this really happy thought, which was I saw over the weekend that we had the number one episode podcast on iTunes, and I thought, we have the number one podcast, and we're one of the few that advertises. Like, we have advertising on right. our podcast. And so, obviously, it hasn't hurt us. I mean, we don't... But we don't try to disguise it.
No, you
shouldn't. Know, we just go, hey, we got this big warehouse. Donnie's got a family. I got a family. Yeah. There's four other people that are working computers and editing things, and we're paying all these people.
Yeah.
So we have these sponsors. We'll do a 90-minute show. It's going to take about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll have some fun with it. But we're not trying to pretend like it's not what
and,
it is.
And people are generally, I think people are generally cool with that. I mean, last year... I got paid to send out a couple tweets for some movies that were coming out. And I did it because it was enough money that was like, wow, it seems ridiculous not to write a sentence
right.
to get this money. And it's certainly not something I'm going to do all the time. And, you know, and I did it, and then a small number of people complained. And so I
was pretty drunk when I wrote that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought you would have all people.
I know, I'm kind of a hypocrite.
And it was for The Hammer.
The movie didn't have Rob Lowe, it was really the problem.
I wrote a big, long post, and I just said, listen... I appreciate that your time and attention is valuable. I'm not trying to take advantage of you. I'm not trying to go fucking buy a yacht. But my feeling is I want to be able to give people as much free entertainment as possible. And
right.
it is very expensive to give away free stuff. Like it costs money. Like you just like you said, you know. So
I was spending $10,000 a month in bandwidth.
Yeah.
For the first year. And it was like right out of my pocket, like $10,000 a month. I mean, first off, you could live just about, that would pay the mortgage in just about any house you wanted to live in.
Any kind of, and you could have a super nice car.
And you could have a Lamborghini fully insured in the driveway for the amount that we're just giving away
for
whatever.
Yeah.
And so I tell people, look, man, we got equipment and microphones and compressors and all sorts of shit and employees, and they need insurance, and there's the warehouse. That's another $5,000 a month just to keep the mortgage paid over there.
When
stuff.
You start,
like, we
like,
got to do
start
it.
Looking at net profit, it's like, oh, there's really not much left over. Like in order to, and that's what I'm learning. That's what happens when you try to scale. Because for me, I mean. Yeah, sure, it'd be great to have tons of money in that, I guess, or whatever. But for me, it's more about, I'm fascinated by the growth process. Like, I'm always a sucker in any movie when you see the montage of, like, my song just got played on the radio for the first time. And then you see the montage of the song climbing the charts, and then they build a business, and then they, you know, there's a merch wing. And
I love that
all
thing
that,
you do.
And then, exactly, it's exactly right. The Oneaters. And
if only Chad Lowe. He couldn't have carved out a part for Chad Lowe. Couldn't have played the drums.
He didn't do it, though. Mm. He didn't do it.
Yeah, no, the growth is
and so
cool.
That's what's exciting to me, and that's why, like, oh, you know, that's why there's a podcast and a website, and that's why we launched this physical space downstairs, and we're going to, you know, this room you're in now will be a studio, you know, when we get the equipment in.
Right.
And because we're at Meltdown right now. And, like, all of that is what's – it's just like a fun game. It's just like seeing, well, how far can we push it and how much can we scale it? And, you know, I don't know if it's going to – any of it's going to work, but the process of it's really fun because as an artist – You don't make a, you know, like, I don't make a vacuum cleaner nozzle that I can actually track easily. Like, oh, we sold this many units, and now we'll start going door to door in this community. And,
right.
You know, and so, you know, when you're an artist and you're sort of the commodity, it's harder to follow that stuff. So this has all been super fun for me.
I like what it's done and for everybody in their live business, like everybody's shows and then doing live podcasts, but, you know, selling tickets. Everyone I talk to says they're playing much bigger theaters they're playing theaters instead of clubs.
Just ran into Greg Barrett this morning at a Starbucks, and he was like, yeah, the Doing the Closet podcast with Dave Anthony has completely changed.
Right.
I mean, you know, you're talking about guys who for years were on the road trying to get people to come out to shows, doing multiple television shows, and it never worked. Me included.
Oh, I don't think, I really don't think that, again, that 11:30, that 11:30 late night show thing, it has, I'll tell you what it's for. It's for your sort of publicist. It's for the movie studio executives.
Yeah.
It's for, it's like, it's sort of like what I think, I'd say it's the equivalent to this. It's like every year the Super Bowl will come around and Coke will buy a couple of spots, you know, and the spots will be, you know, $10 million for 30 second spots, you know, and I'll always say to the guy next to me, really, do you think we need awareness of this product? And don't you think everyone who's at a Super Bowl party is either drinking a Coke right now or Pepsi? But I don't think the commercial, the polar bears doing the hula dance, is going to make me put my Pepsi down and pick up the Coke. And by the way, if you're Coca-Cola, if you're the corporation, you could either buy one 30-second Super Bowl spot or you could buy 70 delivery trucks bought and paid for with insurance and fuel for right. 5 years. Like, right. as a company, doesn't seem to make more sense to buy another bottling facility than do that. But I realized there don't really... That isn't a moneymaker. That's just for the stockholders.
Right.
That's just for them saying, hey, we can do this.
Yeah.
But it's not going to make them money. They're not going to sell $30 million more of Coke on that one, those three ads or whatever it is.
I'm sure it's also like a business structure. Maybe there's a tax, like maybe a certain percentage of their budget has to go to advertising. They literally have to spend that money. Like
But I think it's more of a vanity thing
right.
than a sort of nuts and bolts kind of thing. And I think if you do the Tonight Show, that's a vanity thing. But
yeah.
I don't think you sell that many books, and I don't think you put that many asses in seats. I think this, I mean, I can tell you as a guy who's come out with a book
yeah.
and has done shows where it's like, I didn't see any sales change after doing the show, but the podcast, that moves the product.
And you're 5 days a week now?
Yes.
God, that's amazing. That is so amazing. I mean, we, you know, wow, we moved to two, and I feel like it's, you know, what I kind of think of is when I was much younger, I had a girlfriend where we had two dogs, and we're mm-hmm. like, you know, two dogs is a piece of cake. They
right.
take care of each other, you know, like they're it's fun. So then we introduced a third dog into the situation, and it created an insane amount of extra work. Like that third, so that's
yeah.
why I think like jumping from two to five a week, like
well,
that, is a...
It is sort of like earthquakes, and like a 7.0 is bad, but an 8.0 is 1,000 times more powerful.
Yeah.
Like I thought it would be 12% more powerful. No, it's 10,000 times more powerful. Yeah, I know. This is my same. I mean, if you've just replaced dogs with wives, I have about the same theory. So I don't understand how that works. But it's that way with kids. It's like
right.
I have twins, and twins is, you know, a fair amount of work. But but triplets is five times as much work.
Right.
Not 33% more
right,
work.
Right. That's
right.
What, that creates that one extra dynamic. And also, I also wanted to, you know, I never got to talk about this before, and maybe it's old news now, but. You know, there was that big hubbub where Snooki got $35,000 to speak at the university, and everyone freaked out because
mm-hmm.
she was getting paid so much money.
Yeah,
I it's sort of like the allocating the Coca-Cola budget thing to advertising. Now, listen, I'm not a Jersey Shore fan. I don't give a shit about those people. But when I saw people freaking out about that, I was like, yeah. But if you know anything about how the college markets work, that's what people get paid to go speak at. Like that's what the budgets are.
Right.
Like that's what. You know, Carrot Top was getting 25, 30, 40, 50 grand a show.
Right.
That, you know, these colleges have an X number of dollars they have to allocate to entertainment every year or they lose that money. They are forced by the university to use that money.
I'm laughing because I haven't done a college I hadn't done a college in years. And back in 99 and 2000 and maybe 2001... Dr. Drew and I used to go out and do the college circuits, and it was, you know, Loveline was huge on MTV and huge on campuses, and so we would just go in there, and we would, you know, do these 3,000-seat venues, and they'd be sold out every time, and it was like rock and roll, you know? And then I hadn't done one in 10 years, and then about 2 weeks ago, somebody said, We were going out on the road, and I think we're going to Cleveland and Pittsburgh and a few places like that. And somebody said, you want to do Mansfield University in Mansfield, Pennsylvania on a Wednesday night? And I was like, I guess. And I was like, I was already going out on the road. Like, let's just go out a day earlier. And I was playing Pittsburgh anyway. So I was like, all right. And so it was like out of a movie, you couldn't find Mansfield, Pennsylvania on the map. I've never heard of Mansfield University. Had about 3,000 students. My high school had about 4,000 students. It's a Wednesday night. So, you know, Mansfield, Pennsylvania, hopping on a Wednesday night. Like total all the right moves kind of sleepy town in Pennsylvania. It literally starts snowing as we're pulling in. Had to take the prop plane to get there, walk into the place. I've been spoiled the last year playing a lot of nice theaters and having big crowds and, you know, playing the Moore Theater with 1,900 people there and rock and roll in Seattle and everything. There's about 210 people sitting in a place that held about 1,000, and they're all just sitting there like it was free for students and like $8 for townies or something. And it's just, they're kind of spread out. Mm-hmm. And it was real like sort of Spinal Tappy kind of a playing Magic Mountain kind of thing.
Yep.
And
puppet show, then Adam
Curry. Right. And I was like backstage and I sort of peeked around the curtain. I could see it was pretty sparse out there. And I sort of went back. It was like snowing outside. I didn't even know where I was. And I was totally jet lagged because to get to Mansfield, Pennsylvania to play a gig at 8 o'clock, and you're going to leave that same day.
Yeah.
You're leaving.
Oh, you leave at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, you're like 5 a.m. flight out of LAX. Fly into, I don't know, Pittsburgh, whatever, get on a prop plane, fly it into outside of Mansfield, then a 100-mile drive and rented tours.
That's the real college.
You're staying at a Days Inn, like as
next
I come
to a truck stop,
literally, and as
eat jerky for dinner,
as I come walking out, I'm like, I've just literally been traveling for 14 hours. I left my house at 4:15 this morning, kind of thing. I'm totally out of it. And I'm just looking at the sparse crowd out there, and I say, and the guy I'm traveling with, Mike August, says, who played here? Who was the last act in the theater? And the guy doesn't miss a beat, and he goes, Buffalo Gay Men's Chorus? And I was like, awesome. They set him up. I mow him down.
And how did the show go?
It was the only... I have to be honest... It was really the only time in the last 5-8 years that I actually felt sorry for myself. Like I don't normally do that because I have a pretty good life and a pretty good house and a bunch of cars and all that stuff. And you know, I'm blessed. I'm not a religious person, but I have a pretty damn good life. And I was just like, standing there up on stage, it's in Mansfield, Pennsylvania. It's snowing out. It's Wednesday night. I've been up since 4 a.m., you know, L.A. time. The audience, again, sort of sparse, you know. It's like someone took a 1,000-seat theater, took 200 people in it and said, spread out, you know. Right. And I'm doing this thing where it's like, I'm not going to do my act because it's just, I'm going to... I'll start with 20 minutes and then we'll do some Q&A because it's like a college thing, you know? And so it's like a lot of questions about Jimmy and Dr. Drew. And I'm like, I'm standing up there and it's snowing outside and I'm fucking sleep deprived. I'm thinking, Jimmy's going on year number 8 of his successful late night, you know, network show. And Dr. Drew's just added a 13th show. He's on like CNN 2 doing another, like... Drew is literally has 21 shows. Yeah. Like your biggest nightmare, whether it's a divorce or it's, you know, Dean Martin goes one way and Jerry Lewis goes another. Like, you'd like your partner not to get AIDS and die, but somewhere around the 8th show, when you don't have any shows.
And then you're on stage in Mansfield, Pennsylvania, like, it's me, Maverick Adam Carolla, with my podcast network.
Awesome. Another question about Jimmy. no, I've not Yeah, it's been some time since I've been invited on his show. He does owe me an email. Thanks. Over here. I know I don't know what Dr. Drew is doing right this second. I really would have no way of knowing that.
Should I call him?
Yes, there's an opportunity that I might be a guest, probably if it was a panel on one of his shows. Another question about Jimmy? Yeah, go ahead. And then of course all sort of man show like related stuff. Right, and I was like literally sitting up there going, "Wow, okay, I feel sorry for myself. I feel bad."
No, but that's good. That means you have a long history of stuff to draw from. I wonder, it's funny. You know, I always thought Kimmel and I were friends, and then I realized last year we're actually not friends.
What happened?
What happened was that I emailed him right after I started doing the podcast, and I was like, listen, I'm doing a podcast. John Hamm's been on, Joel McHale, a few other people. It seems to be going pretty well. I think it'd be great to have you on. And then I get back this kind of weird email that's like, if I do your podcast, then I have to do all of my old Radio Buddies podcasts. And I was like, interesting.
He gave you a hi-hat.
Interesting. Yeah. Like, first of all,
the best looking man on the planet would be a guy named Joel Hamm. By the way, if you could confine those
not John
two.
McHale, though. That guy's a fuck-up.
No, that guy's a douchebag.
He's it's the Rob Lowe, Chad Lowe.
Nobody writes an insulting email like Jimmy, believe me. I've been on the losing end of a few of those.
It was very like, oh, really? So you think I'm a radio guy that has just started a podcast, not that I've had... And then I realized... All these years, because we all started K-Rock together, and I had this idea in my head, like, oh, Jimmy and I are pals. I've been on his show a couple times, but not for, like, 5 or 6 years. And then I realized, like, oh, yeah, we're actually not friends. We're actually not friends. And this was very clear what, you know, in the way that the email was worded, like, oh, yeah, no, I'm just a guy that he worked with once. So that was very telling to me.
It is weird. I would like to, and Jimmy is one of the most generous guys I've ever met, but he can also be, like, just curt and shitty on emails.
I got that, Jimmy.
Yeah, and you will get the generous Jimmy on occasion,
never, and
too.
And I've never asked him since. I made that decision, like... Oh, well, I will never ask you to do anything ever again. And so I just emailed back and I was like, okay, thanks. No, sorry to bother you.
I would like to do a little survey. I don't know how you could do it. Maybe they used to have those mood rings that would turn different colors. But I would like to be in the presence of certain people and find out, do I think there's more here? Like, or do you think there's more here?
Interesting.
Which
just,
one
just
of
like,
us
just, like,
thinks
if you could,
there's more
if there was,
here?
If there was some sort of an interpersonal barometer where you could check the pressure of the relationship.
Right, because there's two sides of that. There's the one where you think, you know, you're great buddies with this guy, but he's really not really thinking of you. And then there's the other side where somebody starts crying when you tell them you can't go to their kid's third birthday, and they're and you're like, what? We don't even.
It's like, did you remember? I remember one of the saddest scenes in the. I don't know why I just thought of this, but in Madonna's Truth or Dare, when this woman is like, "Will you?" You know, this woman thinks that they're really good friends. Maybe they do it. She was like, "Will you be my kid's godmother?" And Madonna's like, "Oh, yeah, I'm really gonna have to think about that."
Right.
And you just got that sense of, oh yeah, this woman thinks there's way more in this relationship than there actually. Is
It's like a Doobie Brothers song, "What a Fool Believes," like, and you don't know, like, you try to, you wonder, like, wait a minute, now I think that about certain people, but then who's thinking that about me?
Could
it be Chris Hardwick as
oh
we speak?
My God. Could it be happening right now? No, it's not happening right now. Thankfully, you and I have maintained a pretty same level of friendship since the mid-90s, like, we've talked even in between gigs. It's not like we've always just sort of like, hey, what's going on, let's go to have lunch, let's hang out, you know.
Yeah.
And I always admired Jimmy, because like Jimmy was always sort of he's a guy that, like, you know, he was basically a sidekick on a radio show, and, you know, like, came up with some ideas, and, you know, and I mean, both you guys, I always like, oh yeah, that's how it's supposed to happen. You need to go out there and create your own stuff. That's what you both, you know, because you were sort of partners back at K-Rock.
Kind of, although we were forbidden from being on the air together. Which is a great
so weird.
Piece of programming. Awesome piece of programming. Yeah, you do, because there's no way anyone was ever going to let Jimmy do his own thing or me do our own thing. It's like you. One thing I did learn early and often is it's like I never got headshots or won out on auditions or got the aforementioned composite worked out or anything. It's just it's never. I just realized if I leave it up to that, it's never going to happen. Yeah. The only way it's like in The Hammer. The only way I'm ever going to star in a movie is if I make the movie.
Right.
No one's going to let me star in their movie. I'll have to create a movie and then I could possibly star in a movie. But that would be the only way I could do it.
And you know, it is the whole Maverick thing is it definitely has its own set of rewards, definitely has its own set of drawbacks, but I don't know. It is pretty exciting, but there are some of those days, you know, like when if I have to worry about design stuff on the website or the website's gone down and the a podcast guest canceled, and then you know here at the space at Meltdown it's like, oh, the lighting rig needs to be, we need you to get a new,
right?
It's like, can I just give this to someone? Can someone just give me money and I'll just show up and talk? Like,
yeah.
There are those days. There are those days. But for the most part, it's pretty rewarding.
I will concur. And, you know, for me, philosophically, it's just what I do. You know, it's just, I didn't even know what a podcast was over 2 years ago when we started. I never listened to anything on the computer. I really didn't know anything. And, you know, my buddy Donnie just said, well, it's you talking and saying whatever you want. And I said, yeah, it didn't seem like there was going to be any way to profit off it or anything. But it just said, like, all right, let's do it. I wasn't doing stand-up at the time. So I not only was there no way in my mind to profit off this thing by monetizing it, by selling advertising space on it. It wasn't even like, well, you can make up that 10 grand a month in bandwidth by selling out the Will Turn Theater.
Right.
I wasn't doing stand-up back then. So I was completely just, I did it 5 days a week just for, file it under what the fuck. Like I was just sitting around doing nothing. But my whole thing is I come from a place and a weird mindset where work is physical. Like work is work. Like you're on a roof, you're sweating, you're mopping off, you're dabbing your brow, you're taking a chug you're taking a scoop of water out of a wooden bucket, you know, and then slashing it on your face, you know, and then someone's yelling, those pallets aren't going to move themselves, Corolla. Like, so that's where I come from. And that's why I'm sitting here. I never look at this as work. I'm always sort of surprised when people do look at this as work, you know?
I am too.
It's sort of sad. I usually find it like sort of pathetic. Like I'm going to do a podcast tonight. I'll do one tomorrow night. You know, I did one over the weekend, but it's like, I'm going to go on Chris's cause this ain't work. This is just talking to Chris.
Around, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And then, but then with that, sometimes you forget because there's not a large entity who is like, fill out these W-2s and we'll get you on our insurance and blah, blah, blah. That it actually is a thing that will help your work more than, you know, going.
Oh, by all means. And speaking of that, by the way, I know you like movies. I told you I was going to go see Fast 5.
And how was it? Was it Fast and Furious?
No, tonight.
Oh, it's tonight.
Which is before this airs. But I went and did one of my basic cable commentaries for Fast and Furious, the last one, basically.
Right.
Was
that Tokyo Drift or was that not the
It was the one?
One
after that one.
Okay.
And they've been pretty successful. And you can get them on iTunes or you can get them at adamcarolla.com and basically just talk over the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know how it goes.
Yeah.
And it's actually fun. Do you do those things?
No.
They're pretty good. It's a nice, little way to monetize your shit. Like, you don't want to sell advertising or what have you. Fine. Pick a movie you dig. Pick a Nerdist movie.
Yeah.
Get a couple buddies. Put it up. Talk it up. And just put it on iTunes for $2.99. And then people play it over the movie. It's Mystery Science
totally,
2000.
Totally Mystery Science Theater, yeah.
Basically that. For me, it's with Fast and Furious. But it's just a nice little way to... People dig it. It's fun. You're not going to sell a million of them. You sell a couple thousand of them. But you get a couple dollars will roll in, and it's fun for the people.
And where do you do them?
I do them in my studio.
Oh, you actually just... Oh, you just record in the studio. Oh,
I just
like
do
riff
it.
Tracks. Like, yeah, just like riff tracks or Cinematic Titanic or...
Yeah, just do it. I'll just do it on a Saturday. Just put out, you know, put out one a month, get a different comedian to sit in.
Now, see,
it's
here's why, you know, here's where my brain always gets in the way. I go, oh, yeah, but the riff tracks guys are doing that and Cinematic and Adam's doing that. And they're probably doing a better job than I would do. So that's what that always kills.
I'm sure riff tracks doing a better job than I'm doing but doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. I mean, the point is this. I'm with you in the low self-esteem department. I'm just saying. I'm just saying, just because someone else ate dinner before you doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to eat dinner tonight.
Oh my God, I haven't eaten in 6 weeks. Why didn't you tell me this before?
I know you're emaciated.
I don't feel good.
Yeah, no,
my blood sugar is way low.
You gotta eat something.
So I can eat dinner if other people are eating dinner. I thought that was like a pack animal thing. Like, oh no, tonight's your night.
They do not have the market cornered on dinner, nor do they have it on brunch.
Ah, shit.
Someone invented dinner. You're still allowed to eat.
Screaming cocksicles.
Yeah.
Well, Adam Carolla, we're at the end of our time, but honestly, you know, I mean, this is as fun for me because we get to catch up.
Sure.
You know, like, because we both lead busy lives. So, you know, whenever you want to do one of these, you're more than welcome to come just fucking hang out and we'll record it.
My pleasure.
I will put this up soon, which means that people can catch you in Minneapolis at the Varsity Theater April 29th. I mean, not at the Varsity Theater. They will catch you in Milwaukee April 29th.
Right.
The Varsity Theater is the 28th, but those are sold out. God damn you! My Varsity Theater is May 6th. That is not sold out. For fuck's sake, please.
Let's do that.
And then your Wiltern show is May 21st in Los Angeles.
Right. And your arch nemesis, Jimmy Kimmel, will be taking the stage with me.
We're not even friends enough to be nemeses.
Yeah. All right.
Like, nemeses means that you had to have a friendship and then a falling out at some point.
Right.
We didn't really have that. We had a one-sided, I think Jimmy and I are pals. It turns out we're actually not pals at all.
After I'm done explaining to him who you are, then I'll explain the rift that's come between the two of you.
I don't have any negative feelings against the guy. Listen, it's not his fault that I'm not more important to him. Like,
no,
it's not, it's his,
no, you know. I know. Listen, I know what it's like. I mean, what I'm saying is just to defend him and you, there is this mode that you get into when people start coming at you from different angles, where you just get in these like super short, can't do that. No, thank
you. Especially if it's a day when you just got like 10,
right,
you know, direct emails, like, I need you here, like pulling you in 10 different directions.
And you stop saying like, I'd really love to. You just go, no thanks.
Right.
And then you sound like a dick. But so be it.
So be it. All right. Thanks, Adam Carolla.
Thanks, Chris.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Nancy's love story could have been ripped right out of the pages of one of her own novels.
She was a romance mystery writer who happens to be married to a chef.
But this story didn't end with a happily ever after.
When I stepped into the kitchen, I could see that Chef Brophy was on the ground, and I heard somebody say, call 911.
As writers, we'd written our share of murder mysteries. So when suspicion turned to Dan's wife, Nancy, we weren't that surprised.
The first person they look at would be the spouse.
We understand that's usually the way they do it.
But we began to wonder, had Nancy gotten so wrapped up in her own novels...
There are murders in all of the books.
...that she was playing them out in real life? You can listen to Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy, early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.